Hello, world, and welcome to Search for Calling. My name is Ken Payne, and I'm the number one process executive recruiter in the world, along with my guest, Greg Yale.
Hello, Ken.
Hey, how you doing, Greg?
Just fine, thank you.
All right, so you're up in Fort Wayne.
That's correct, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Fort Wayne, Indiana. So you're an executive recruiter also. So tonight's show, we have two recruiters. A lot of people call us headhunters. What we do is we get search assignments. We specialize. Greg, your specialty is in plastics.
That's right, plastics and also offset printing for anything made of plastic.
And for
that's
anybody
like a
yo-yo. Like a what?
Well, I was going to say it would be like a yogurt cup or a sour cream container, anything you might find in the dairy section of the grocery store that's printed with pretty pictures.
Pretty pictures. So how long have you been doing recruiting yourself, Greg?
23 years.
You remember the day you got started?
Yes. That was April Fool's Day, 1985.
Wow. So tonight, if anyone's interested in sending their resume to a recruiter, their specialty, if you guys out there do plastics, you can send it to Greg. Greg, what is your email?
I'll say it, Ken, then I'll spell it. info@theplasticspeople.net. It's info at T-H-E. PLASTICSPEOPLE.net.
info@theplasticspeople.net.
That's correct, and the website is theplasticspeople.net.
And if anyone's interested in sending me their resume, I'm looking for quality professionals, operations managers, engineering managers, in manufacturing, and I'm worldwide, nationwide. Tonight's topic is going to be about trying to find your kindred spirits in business. Imagine that you're looking for a job, say you may have lost your job, and you're sitting there scratching your head going, gosh, you know, what am I going to do? Gonna find another job. Hope when I find another job, it's not like the same one I just left. And in today's economy, a lot of people are kind of scratching their head, thinking, "Well, the Industrial Revolution is over, and the chances of working at one place for 20 years, 30 years, that's over. And getting that gold watch, that's kind of over." So, if anyone's out there that's lost their job and would like to partake in any executive coaching, life design, career counseling, so that whatever has happened in the past doesn't happen again in the future. My telephone number is 877-222-1492. And you can get to my website, the recruiting website, at www.searchforjob.com. The information that's relevant to executive coaching is www.searchforcalling.com. If there's anybody out there who wants to give us a call worldwide, the telephone number is 877-489-6350. And if you're calling from Canada or the USA, the telephone number to call us at is 888-228-4494. So, yeah, we're welcoming any callers, anyone that's been looking for a job, wants to run a life design session. We've got 2 hours to provide that session tonight. So, Greg, you got started 1985 on April Fool's Day, April 1st.
April 1st, 1985. That's right, Ken.
Wow. That's, what is that, 23? Yeah, 23 years.
Yeah, just celebrated the 23rd year last month.
So here,
I do believe.
Us, yeah, last month, yep, 23. So I remember when I started recruiting with you, we were doing split placements.
Right.
You said that your father owned the recruiting office, the business. And
that's right. He was the owner. He had three people helping him out at the time I came in.
So give our listening audience a 360 of what the recruiting sector looks like. You know, how do you go about finding a search assignment, and you know, kind of give us a 360 of how you do it.
Sure, Ken. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, most of it is on the telephone. You know, over the last 20 years or so, just finding companies and keeping their phone numbers and contacts up to date, and continuously giving them a call. You know, and each time finding out what they're looking for, what kind of people. And what kind of people that they find most hard to find, and just keep notes on that. And when I do find people like that, I'll give them a call again. They might be looking for someone, they might not be. It's just a matter of those staying in touch with the companies, keeping in contact with them. Then, of course, through the website and also my phone numbers, a little bit of advertising, I do get people that call me, that find me and call me. Most of it after that is, you know, word of mouth from production worker to production worker that might have a business card of mine that they keep on file and pass my number along if something comes up for one of their work associates.
So you get the search assignment, and then do you go into your data files and then start pulling up searches of individuals that would meet the criterion that the client's given you?
Right, and, you know, working with them over the, you know, that length of time, kind of have a feel for what they're looking for. If there's anything in particular that I'm not quite understanding, I'll ask for details on it. But always a salary range and a shift, you know, three shifts or 12-hour shifts. You know, there's a range of opportunities. A lot of people don't, or a lot of people have a specific shift that they like the best. And they seem to want to continue to work that shift. And, you know, that's a consideration as well in trying to find someone.
So whenever you're calling somebody, are they usually working?
Well, it's a...
as far as the candidates.
Yeah. I have called people at work. I mean, that's, you know, anymore, it's whenever we can get a hold of them.
Yeah.
You know, The worst time to call someone is when they're not answering the phone.
Exactly.
So if they answer the phone, that's the best time to call them. And occasionally that's at 4 in the morning and sometimes at 3 in the afternoon. Depends on what shift and where they're at and when we can get in contact with each other.
Sure. So
Oh, go ahead, Ken. What was that?
Yeah. You remember your first day that you got started in recruiting?
Oh, I remember it well, yeah.
Yeah, run it down.
Well, I started about 8:30 in the morning, went in there. My dad was at that time planning on retiring, which he did later in November of 1985. He had three people working for him at the time. And we came to an arrangement where the three people and I would purchase the business from him when he retired, and we did. But as far as getting on the phone for the first time, my dad handed a resume of an injection molding technician, someone with 8 years hands-on plastic injection molding background, setting up presses and changing molds. And then he handed me a list of injection molding companies in southern Michigan, the area that this candidate was from, and next to each company name was a phone number. He handed me both of those papers and said, start calling. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
So you got to send out this candidate's resume your first day?
I did. And the first phone call that I made regarding this gentleman was to a company in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They didn't need anyone at the time. But 3 years later, I did place someone with that company, the company that was my first phone call.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Staying in touch with them. And then later that day, April 1st, 1985, when I first started, there was a little bit of training that my dad had, some tapes of an old recruiter by the name of Phil Ross, and he had cassette tapes, and I listened to several hours of him that first day and then that night again before the second day, which kind of put things into perspective and really how hard you do have to work in making the phone calls. And I just continued that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met with Phil, too. He had a training session in Columbus, Ohio in 1986 that I went to.
Wow. Yeah, Phil is, last time I talked to Phil, it's been about 7 years ago. Phil was not doing the full-time recruiting, but was still doing some training. And at the time, he said he was doing voices for cartoons.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. He had a very good, deep voice.
Yeah, recruiting, it's an interesting, definitely an interesting calling. I like the idea of increasing a person's livelihood. If you really want to affect a person, you can imagine what it'd be like. You know, you go to school or you're working really hard, and next thing you know, recruiter calls and opens up the door. Next thing you know, you relocate, and it affects their entire dynamics and it increases their livelihood. And they're making more money. They have more hope for advancement. They're not being typecast where they're currently working at. So it's a new start. It's a new beginning, and I really enjoy it. Really, I just love it. I started recruiting on Columbus Day. 1991. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, Columbus. Why does that ring a bell, Ken?
Because the name of my company is Columbus Group. And 1991. Right. Made a placement. It was Halloween, so it was roughly within 2 weeks. And I called around some companies and was asking the plant managers, do you need anything? And this one company in my hometown said, yeah, we're looking for a quality engineer. So I started within about 25 to 50 mile radius of that location of their client and started calling around looking for quality engineers, and heard it from the grapevine that there was a company that was going to close its doors. And I called over there, and all these resumes started coming through the fax machine. You know, everybody's like, oh man, I need to get out of here, I'm looking for a job. But as this plant closes, what am I going to do, So, doing some networking, came across this guy, and he's a quality engineer, and he goes, yeah, if I don't get a job, I'm going to, I don't know what I'm going to do. So, got his resume, sent it over to the company. The company looked at it, says, yeah, let's bring this guy in. I'm really like, wow, this is great, So, that was like, 7 days to 8 days after I started, and they interviewed the guy, and then I called him back up, and they said, yeah, we want to make this guy an offer. So it was like, wow, man, this is great. And he ended up accepting the offer, and so he didn't have to worry about going unemployed and all that scary feeling about, I hope I get a job and all that.
Yeah, it happens like that sometimes.
a good feeling, you know. You know, a person sitting there and they're going, oh, no, I've lost my job. They're going to close the plant. And able to hook them up with a higher paying position. And I don't know, just really enjoy it. There's a lot of love in it for me. Can you think of your first, do you remember your first placement?
Well, I do. I'm trying to think of some of the details on it. Actually, it was a kind of a temporary type of a placement where a company that I had called looking for a color matcher that would match the color of plastic pigments, you know, in a laboratory, and then if there was any fine tuning on that color, they would adjust it. But they only needed a person for 2 months, and I had the person that was in college that just graduated was in the area and needed work for a couple months, so we put the two together that way. Now, the first full-time position was a week or two later with another color matcher that did go to work full-time for a company that that made the plastic pellets.
What's the name? You remember the name of the company?
Farrell Corporation in Stryker, Ohio.
You know, Farrell's got one down in Evansville, too, I believe.
Yeah, they sure do. Mm-hmm.
Stryker, Ohio. Is that kind of close to Fort Wayne?
It's an hour northeast of Fort Wayne. And it's, I think they make those dum-dum lollipops there, too, in that town or close by.
Huh. You're talking about the little bitty dudes.
Yeah, the dum-dums.
Uh-huh. So what do you think about recruiting these days? It's been 23 years. Can you take some time here and think about this one, but can you remember your funnest, most challenging, or weirdest, or, you know, wow, I can't believe I made a placement, or like, that was really fun, or one that really stands out, like your favorite placement?
Well, there's a few of them. One that came to mind right away was one gentleman. This is probably close to 22 years ago, and he was working for a company in New York State that made fuses for bombs. And he had these little instead of bullet points, he had a one of those black round bombs with a fuse that's lit, you know, kind of like a cartoon bomb.
All right, now hold on.
As his bullet points.
All right, hold on a second. I want to get a mental image picture of what you're talking about. It looks like a great big bullet.
No, you know where you have what they call bullets on a resume. Might be a dot or a cross or something like that. That they call that a bullet. But instead of having a dot or a cross or an asterisk, he had a little black, round, cartoon-looking bomb with a fuse that's lit.
Yeah, I get it now.
All right. He's working at a fuse factory.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that, it was just funny. So, I talked to him a little bit, you know, longer than I might have, but I learned a lot about what he was doing, and it seems that he had a lot of plastic product design background as well. And I had matched him up with a company in Toledo, Ohio as a
what do they make
product.
In Toledo?
They make plastic closures and bottles,
bottles,
as a product designer.
Yep.
And he had a, I think his son was in kindergarten at the time, and this guy's still working there. And
wow.
I think that his son is now out of his residency in medical school. he may be a medical doctor already, but he was in kindergarten when he moved with his dad to Toledo.
It's nice to know the ripple effect that you've touched that man's life and increased his livelihood to the point where his son is now able to say
yeah,
he's a doctor.
It is. Yeah. And, there's other ones, too, and it seems like the ones that stand out are the ones that I really went into you know, and listening to more of the details of what someone's doing and what they want to do, and bringing that out in them. And then, of course, doing the same with the company that they're interviewing with. It just seems that those stand out more than any. And then there's the ones that that you and I did work with, and we made a number of placements, that's for sure, together, where we worked pretty closely in finding that right person. Do you remember any of them, Ken?
I was sitting here trying to remember one. Yeah, there was this guy. He was down in Mexico, Missouri. He's an older guy, and I remember calling him a classic. Then you laugh. You go, a classic? What do you mean by classic? I tell you, he's just, you know, just an old classic, you know, like an old car. You know, he's probably in his 60s, you know? And I think it was injection blow and blow molding guy is what he was.
Okay.
And it was down in Mexico, Missouri, or somewhere down there in the wine country. And I ended up placing him, and he was doing a lot of good. I think I placed him as a supervisor or a manager, somewhere like a production manager.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
I don't know if you remember him or not.
I think I do, Ken, yeah.
Yeah, is this ringing any bells?
In Herman, Missouri.
Yeah, Herman.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That area, yeah, in the Missouri River area.
Yep, and I remember I placed him there, and I think he ended up working there for about like 4 or 5 months, and he called me up and got into some sort of you know, stressful situation and wanted to get out, and it was just kind of, you know, rough on him.
Yeah, I understand.
I think I called you up and tried to blame it on you. Sure can.
He did not.
Give me another one. I can't remember his name. I guess it was probably back, what, in the...
oh, gosh.
Probably 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 96, maybe, 97.
Yeah, I remember him. That one there stands out. Because I remember I called him a classic, and you started laughing. I go, what are you calling him a classic for? Yeah, he's a classic molder, you know.
Yeah, someone starts right from the ground up, right at the press or the blow molding machine.
Oh, I remember another one. This one here was down in Texas. Came across this company. It was kind of like a competitor of Rubbermaid, making those bales. Buckets and stuff like that. And,
yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Around a Polish last name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
Tchaikovsky.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So I had a place in this, you know, I had a plant manager. The offer, it was all done, said and done. And all of a sudden it was like, I don't know, somebody changed their mind, and I'm going, oh, man, what am I going to do? So I gave you a call up, and all of a sudden, you know, within about, like, you know, 2 days, bam, there you go, man, here's your guy. So I give him a call, and he just lost his job, which I love because, you know, I like to be able to get a person back up and winning again.
Right.
And so I ended up placing him. It was really fast. I remember sitting there, called him up at night, and, you know, he's sitting on the offer thinking whether he's going to do it or not. And,
uh-huh.
You know, you know, they kind of like sit on the offer on pins and needles, and all the while I'm sitting here thinking, well, you know you're going to take it. I mean, you know, it's the best thing you got. You don't have anything else in your hopper. So, he's, you know, I remember talking to him at night, and then ended up placing him.
Yeah, as I recall, he worked there for quite a long time.
Yeah. Turned out really good.
Yes.
Yeah, we've done a lot of things together. I had started at Fortune Personnel. I worked there for about, what, 3 years? And that was a franchise where you were not allowed to do any splits outside of the franchise. And then I went to a CCI, worked for Steve. And this is whenever Steve exposed me to the great world of networking and affiliations. And I forget what it was called back in those days. NPA?
Yeah, it could have been NPA or FIPC. I'm not sure. But they're just, you know, a network of recruiters that work together. And, you know, back then the network was you know, telephones and the U.S. mail. But, you know, it's evolved since then. But, yeah, I remember that. And there was a period of time, it was about a year and a half, like from 95 to 97, that you and I made what looked about 18 placements in that one-and-a-half-year period,
mm-hmm.
which basically is one a month, one placement a month, like on average there, for that short period of time. But things just kind of clicked, I guess. And
definitely my go-to guy. If I ever needed anything, I said, hey, Greg, here's what I'm looking for.
Well, Steve must have asked you to call me or something, because I remember getting a telephone call from you. And I picked the phone up, and you go, hey, this is Greg Gale. This is Aiken Payne. My name is... I'm Aiken Payne. Aiken Payne.
You're like, what the hell is this? What is this?
Yeah, that's an Aiken Payne, all right.
Yeah, he gave me like two or three people to call, and I don't think any of those people are even still in business.
Well, yeah, I don't know who they were, but that happens. It seems like it's something you got to stay on top of to stay in the business.
And you almost went out of business about 2 years ago, didn't you? You were thinking about I don't want to do this anymore.
it seems like I do that about every other month. Oh, but saying I'm ready to go out of business, I don't really mean that. It's just get me on a bad day, evidently.
Yeah, I'm good about
it. But I guess going out of business in this business is as easy as not calling someone for a few weeks in a row. And that about does it.
Yeah.
So I can remember when my dad retired in November of 85. He was well known and people called him a lot. But I think it was because he called a lot of people, because maybe a month to 6 weeks after he retired, he wasn't receiving any phone calls anymore. And it's just it can be that quick.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you mean. When did he start? You remember what year it would be? How many years he put into recruiting?
Yeah, 1972. So he was recruiting for 14 years.
What did he do before that?
Yeah, I've already recruited 10 years longer than he ever recruited.
Yeah. What did he do before he got into recruiting?
My dad or me?
Yeah, your dad.
Well, he was a plastics engineer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, after World War II, he went to Indiana Institute of Technology here in Fort Wayne and got his BS, bachelor's in mechanical engineering, in 3.5 years on the GI plan, or the GI Bill, and started with U.S. Rubber and was moving equipment from plant to plant for them throughout the U.S., and then went to work for a local company called Pribble Plastics in New Haven, Indiana. They made, I think it was melamine waste baskets for Rubbermaid or something like that. And then he got a call from a recruiter, believe it or not, in 1957 to go to work for Carlon Products in Aurora, Ohio. And they were a producer of PVC pipe and pipe fittings. So he went to work for them as a chief engineer in 1957.
What year were you born?
1956.
You was just a baby.
I sure was.
Yeah.
And he worked for Carlon till 1970, then moved back to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and started a couple small businesses and then got into recruiting in 1972.
Wonder whatever got him to think I want to be a recruiter.
I don't know other than, you know, a recruiter placed him in 1957, so he knew a recruiter's. And he, I think he was looking for just, you know, franchises and businesses. And he came across Management Recruiters. That was a franchise that he started. And then within a year or two, he left. I don't know how you leave him. Whatever the arrangement is, you can leave, I guess, but to start his own business and just specialize in plastics, since that's what he knew.
Yeah, I remember I went up to work with Steve and started doing a lot of split placements. And then I guess it was after about 2 years, I produced just a whole lot of placements in 1 month. And I go, wow.
Maybe that was a part of that.
Yeah. Well, I just remember billing $100,000 in 1 month, and I'm going,
oh,
man. That's the time we went to Louisville. You had Roger, me, and you, and I was just on cloud nine, thinking, man, $100,000 in 1 month, right? And I was thinking, well, heck, you know, a great amount of that's going to Steve. So, me and my brother, he's a nut bar, great. I don't know. You've talked to Gerald, I'm sure.
I talked to Gerald a few times on the phone. Yeah.
I started at Mercury Consultants there in Rockport and put a great big advertisement in Plastics News talking about the new standard, you know.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, I'm an idealist thinking, you know, I'm going to change the recruiting world, right? And
yeah.
So me and Gerald started doing placements, and I remember I introduced him to you.
Yes.
And you think I'm crazy? No, I'm not. I'm 3/4 insane. Gerald, he's 7/8. I don't know if you picked up on that or not.
No, I didn't. Maybe it's just because we never met.
Darn.
Hey, I'm not starting anything between brothers.
Actually, I'm hoping you think I'm a little crazier than him.
But well, you're crazy, all right.
Oh yeah, I profess to be. If normal, right? I think normal people, they think I'm crazy. I even thought about even making a T-shirt, right? On the front side, it says, "You think you're crazy? I know I'm crazy." You got that?
Yeah.
Okay, on the back.
It's on the back, yeah.
Well, yeah, but on the back, it says, I forget how it goes, but it was pretty good. What was the first one? You think you're crazy?
If you think I'm crazy, you may
you think you're
I'm
crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, oh. You think I'm crazy, right? And I know you're crazy. That's on the front. On the back, it's just the opposite. You think I'm crazy? I know you're crazy. So they're in the think and I'm in the know. That is terrible.
So you got a picture of the T-shirt in your head.
Mm-hmm.
What color is it?
It's white. So it's, you know, just take a T-shirt, right? Got it?
Yeah.
On the front, it's white. But it's black letters. You got it?
Yeah.
Black letters that says, "You think I'm crazy. I know you're crazy." But on the back, right, it's white with, it's black with white letters.
And it seems like you're going to be spending a lot of money sewing the two hats together.
You just dye it. I think that normal people are crazy. Normal. What is normal?
I have no idea.
I think people who... I've got a theory. You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. This is going to be some fun. All right. So if you imagine, you know, you draw a circle, right? All right. And in the center of that circle is...
How come everything you start with is always you draw a circle?
Everything is a circle, man. To me, you know, where we emanate from is a circle, right? So I like starting with the circle. So in the center of that circle, you got this?
Yes.
Right, in the very center, right, let's say that's inside the circle, is everybody's reaching for normalcy, you know, trying to fit in. Yeah, you know, what would
okay.
they think? What would they think? What would they think, right? What would they think? You got that?
Yeah, everyone's in a circle saying, what would they
what
think?
What would they think? You know, don't want to get outside the circle. What would they think, right? You got
who's
that?
Outside the circle?
Well, I'm outside the circle for sure, because I don't care what they think. Because I know I'm crazy, and they think they're crazy. You know, I know they're crazy, and they think I'm crazy. See, they're in the think, and thinking I'm crazy, and thinking they're crazy. I know I'm crazy, and I know they're crazy. But let's get back to that circle.
Okay.
So they're in there going, what would they think? What would they think, right? All trying to, you know, kind of walking on eggshells and, you know, being politically correct, and what would they think? What would they think, right? Now, you know, as an astronaut's got this tether line. Now, he can get outside the capsule and cruise out there and do a lot
yeah.
of, you know, explore the unknown stuff, you know?
That's right.
What, you know, what's, here's what I think. Actually, here's what I know. In the center of the circle, your tether line, if your anchor of character, your biggest accomplishment, everybody would go, Greg, you can't do that. You can't run your own business. You can't do that, you know. But, you know, if you do something phenomenal, you know, a great thing, you know, it increases your character, your guts, your courage. And that makes your anchor of character, like, goes way down in the center, right? So that makes your tether line nice and sturdy. You don't have to worry about, you know, it snapping. You got it?
Okay.
That allows you to go outside the circle. So the more character you have, then the further you go outside the circle.
Okay,
so outside, yeah, go ahead.
The tether line is the character.
I think the anchor of whatever you've done, the anchor, how deep it's buried down in the ground.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's character. So the higher the mountain you climb in life, then the deeper your character goes. So the deeper your anchor goes, okay? You got that?
Yeah.
So everyone's got a rope. Now, I'm outside that circle of normalcy. Got it?
Yeah.
Okay. And I look inside the circle of normalcy. And what? It's almost like a mantra. They're all going around, you know, with the, what would they think? What would they think? What would they think? Right?
Right.
You got that?
Yes, Ken.
Here's what's funny to me, Greg. What would they think, people? All going around going, what would they think? Which tells me no one's really thinking about, I mean, no one's really watching. No
yeah.
one's watching, Greg. Because they're all in their head going, what would they think? They're too busy in their own head putting all their attention on what would they think. So no one really is really thinking about them because they're too busy going around with what would they think. Does that make any sense?
Oh. Yeah.
All right, so what I find is when you're on the outside of what would they think, you don't care what they think, right?
Right.
When you look at it, they're all reaching towards the center. And what would they reach? You know, kind of huddled really close to what would they think, what would they think, what would they think, what would they think? And they're getting really packed in there, really, really tight. What would they think, what would they think, what would they think? And if they ever reach their goal in the center of that circle, you know what they're going to find? Mediocrity. Just mediocrity.
Oh. Why is that?
Well, see, I think that in the center of normalcy is mediocrity. Outside that circle, where the exploration and the journey, you know, live the full, you know, the well-lived life is full of peaks and valleys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people who are in the center of normalcy, they don't like ups and downs. They don't like taking risks. They don't like the journeys on the outside of the circle. They want it to be as flat and consistent and no change as possible. Whenever you get to that state, you live your life in fear because you don't want any ups and downs that risk involves.
Right.
What you end up getting is mediocrity.
Okay.
Can you get it? So you understood that one?
Well, I think so, Ken.
Well, think about it.
Okay.
So if one is going around going, what would they think? What would they think? What would they think? What would they think? And everybody's doing that. The more the person does that.
Yeah.
I think what they end up getting is mediocrity. So risk taking.
Yeah, a lot of people would kind of worry about what other people think of them, but they really shouldn't, because rarely does anyone think anything of anyone. They're too busy thinking, what are they thinking of me?
Exactly. No one's watching. No one's watching in that circle. You got it. All right, so not all, you know, how deep is, you know, that's a nice cognition. All right. So when you start thinking about recruiting, the best people to recruit are the ones who don't care so much about what would they think. Because they're more dynamic, they're more risk-taking, they, you know, exhibit more leadership. You got that?
Yeah.
And they make great contributors wherever they go, I think. So that, you know, the funny thing about whatever I'm looking for somebody to recruit, it's the person who's the risk taker, who's more dynamic. And I spend a lot of time sifting through the people who are going around, what would they think, what would they think, and all that popularity contest of trying to fit in, right?
Right. Okay.
It wastes a lot of time trying to find those, you know, because generally speaking, it takes too long for them to make up their mind. And if you do manage to get them out and recruit them into another place, I think I can place about 5 people who are already on the outside of normalcy, more risk-taking, more high contribution, more yee-haw, let's go, we can make a difference. By the time I can pull and recruit one of those people who are clinging to normalcy.
Yeah, then the people outside that circle that you could place right away, they found a way to get outside of that normalcy circle. It seems that they would only want to, or might fit better in a place where there isn't so much of a defined circle. Now, if they had to go back to a place, would they be able to relate to the people inside a maybe even a smaller circle?
If they're high
enough. Or if they were thrown into that situation, what would they do?
It's a good conversation we're having, because we're going to eventually get into the conversation of hierarchy. The movers and the shakers and the high pots, called high potential people. And most companies do not want to pay a fee for, just go out and give me another, you know, person. They don't mind paying a fee for a high potential and a mover and a shaker. Generally, whenever they pay that kind of money for a new employee, they want something more than just average. That's what I found. So back to your question, you get a high pot, high potential.
Okay.
At that point, one or two things happen. One, the company is looking for that type of change agent to come in and jazz it up, shake it up, drive it to the next level. Or they go in to be a change agent, and it's a stagnant culture, and then the politics and the naysayers are like, oh, what's he doing, what's he doing, all that, you know, all that gossip stuff. It just eats them alive, and then they end up getting pushed out. So it's, you know, run across a lot of plant managers and such. They are, you know, manager types, and they go, you know, hey, man, I'm just bored. I mean, this is like, it's more to life than just, you know, staying at the same zone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, want to rise up. I want to, you know, all I can be, so to speak. And so I find that a lot of people's resumes that have had more than, say, five jobs in 15 years are the people who are not going to cling to normalcy. They're going to want to do something more than, have, what is that statistic, 2.5 kids? White picket fence and 2.5 kids? I mean, to them, there's something more to life than just living in the solids of, bricks and wider picket fence, 2.5 kids.
Right.
I think they're more alive. I think they're more aware about what, the journey of life is outside that circle. It's more of a spiritual adventure for them. For me, it's hard to separate spiritual adventures and life journeys. It's almost like it's unpopular to even mention, spirit, the human spirit, but in business, you're not supposed to talk like that. As a recruiter, you think, people go, "Wow, man, you're talking kind of like I wouldn't expect to hear this from a recruiter," and I get that a lot. But I think it has a lot to do with the fact that I'm looking for those people on the outside of the circle who are more comfortable with conversations that evolve around life, existence, psychic abilities, spiritual concepts. To me, they seem to be a lot more comfortable talking about stuff like that.
Okay.
So I find that those are the movers and shakers anyway. And my clients pay, want those kind of people. It's the ones that, are all PC and you got to watch what you say because, why? Because what would they say? What would they say if we were...
What would they think?
Yeah, what would they say? What would they think, those people cling to, And if they ever do reach the goal of being popular, the most popular person of the what would they say crowd, I really do think it would be mediocrity at best. So I like to differentiate in the people I talk to from... Do they have the ability to communicate from authentic self, the spiritual aspect of self, the human being? Or are they just down the solids being human, going through the motions, a hamster on the wheel, collecting the paycheck, looking for security? That really doesn't exist, Greg. It doesn't exist. That gold watch, those days are gone.
Yes.
So I enjoy going out and searching for people who have woken up to their spiritual gifts, to the spiritual aspect of self, and say, hey, I can make a difference. I want to be a turnaround guy. I want to go into an organization and light the fire and drive the company to the next level. And it isn't always just about the money. It's about achievement. It's about purpose. It's about a calling. So, I started reading some books on, happiness. The person who communicates from authentic self instead of just business self, got that
right.
Title, got that wall up there, what would they think, if I talk like this. Those people are very career motivated, are very job motivated. And I looked at a scale of happiness. Look at, here, this is not a circle, here's a triangle. So at the bottom of the triangle would be, I got a job.
That's the bottom of the triangle, the long base of the...
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
I got a job. Now, that's a lot happier than if you don't have a job, because you ain't got a job, You're not a contributing member of society. You're kind of, sucking.
Yeah, you got to have a job just to get to the bottom of the triangle.
Yeah. Pretty much, you just don't even exist if you don't have a job. Well, you exist, but you're existing as just kind of sucking. Well, a person's got a job, right? They're making a difference, whether, pushing widgets, the widgets, to have a ripple effect and affect us all, whether it's a transmission case or whatever, it's, our bottle cap. The thought, the love that's in that bottle cap, next thing you're out there on the beach and you may take it for granted, but that bottle cap is affecting your life. But, it's a job, and it's going to make them a lot more happier than not having any creativity at all or any contribution to society at all. Right above that would be, hey, I've got a career. You got that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happier than a job, right?
Well, yeah, it's a career.
Yeah. It's going the ability.
You're moving up.
Moving up, exactly, moving up. And I'd say probably about 90% of those people don't ever get past that. I got a career and I want to retire. You know, conservatism seems to be their attitude, seems to be their tone. Be careful, it's my career. It's really serious. And, you know, I better keep this job, you know, keep this career, whatever. But they're happier than a person that goes from job to job to job to job because they have more stability. And right above that's called calling. So you go at the bottom with job, in the middle like is career, and the very pinnacle it'd be a person who has a calling.
A calling, a vocation that he knows is right.
Yeah, nurse.
Call.
A doctor. Fireman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a calling. Those people don't get as sick. They have less health problems. Unless they go through a lot of divorces, because I understand, you know, when you get up to some of these callings, people put so much focus on their calling that they may be connected to other family members that don't, you know, align to that. And, you know, I understand doctors and have a lot more divorces. They might, you know, but anyway, generally speaking, I think that people who have callings are just generally happier, more robust.
And that's the genuine calling, knowing that what you're doing is what you should be doing.
Yeah, purpose-driven life.
Purpose.
That. Yeah, what the hell am I here for? Am I out here on some rock spinning around in a galaxy that's part of a solar system and it's just on a rock, right? What am I doing? You know, people, you know, I remember when you came into my office, I said, you know, Greg, do you remember whenever you were a kid and you share with me that story, you know, when you were a child that you used to think about infinity and what's it all about?
Oh, yeah, I did do a lot of thinking about that. I went to Catholic grade school, so, you know, they get you thinking about that pretty early, but, you know, infinity and, you know, no ending, no beginning, no end, which kind of always intrigued me. But I would just, this is like second grade. I mean, I just lie awake in bed at night trying to grasp how that can be. You know, there's absolutely, you know, no beginning. Well, what was, how did things begin? And if there wasn't anything, you know, how could it possibly have started? And if there's no end to time, then I mean, it just got me like doing, like I was dreaming, doing backflips in the air. It was just so confusing to me. It was just like free-floating in space, head over heels or heels over head, trying to grasp the whole thing.
A lot of people.
That thing of time, how to get a handle on what time was and how extended and how huge the universe was. And if I ever made it to the end of the universe or the edge of it, well, then that's a boundary. How can that be? Because things are boundless. There must be something on the other side of that.
Right. Yeah, you can't.
I mean, it was just a confusing mess.
Oh, it's a great mess. Fantastic monster of a mess. I love it. Let's look at it. So one side of your knowing is it has to keep going forever, because if you ever got to the end of the capsule, if you can encapsulate infinity, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be over there digging. You're on that wall over there digging, saying there's got to be something on the other side, right? So there's a greater part of you that says, I know it must be infinite. Because
yeah.
If the other side of you, the linear side of you, ever reaches the capsule, isn't that, see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it must be endless, infinite, no bounds, right? You see both sides?
Well, yeah,
one
I mean,
side
that's what I'm struggling with, just trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
I still don't even know.
Oh, you did. It's that. It is. It's infinite. It keeps going and going and going and going and going and going and going into the void.
Uh huh.
And what's the void? I like the fact that you said flipping head over heels.
Well, maybe I think it was back flips, heels over.
It was back. Yeah. But it was flipping.
One of the two. Free floating.
Out into the oblivion of flipping one side of you is going, it's got to be linear, then you'd flip on the other side, you know, as you're doing your flip, and you go, well, it's got to be infinite, because if I ever get to the end of it, there's got to be something on the other side, then you go back into the linear concept. And that does cause a flip, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is an uncomprehensible mess.
Well, you want to talk about it, because it's one of my favorite subjects, linear and infinity. But, you know, before we go into that one, let's go back to this concept of calling so we can segue into it, how, you know, we went from calling over into concepts of infinity. And we've also discussed spiritual aspects being the authentic self, the human being. And now, when you wake up spiritually, you almost feel alone, thinking, well, everyone's just going through the motions and no one talks about existence and you're not allowed to talk about that stuff. What would they think? And they, to me, it's almost like, you know, so many people are just kind of asleep, going through the motions like a hamster on the wheel, collecting the paycheck, and they forget those nagging mysteries when they were children. Like, it's almost like we've got this popularity agreement, or this subconscious agreement, no, you can't talk about that. And they say, you know, from the time you're in the second and third grade, and I don't know, some people never wake up. They never get out of the linear concept. That it's like, when did you start thinking about infinity again?
Oh, well, it all came back probably in the 99, 2000, 2001, something like that, and probably what all. You know, it's got me thinking on things was the death of my mom and dad in 99. And that, what's that?
It's generally what happens. It's two things. There's a mass awakening going on back in 1999 was the mass awakening. A lot of people started thinking this higher level of consciousness. It wasn't just you. There was a lot of people.
They didn't
went out and told anyone because they were stuck in that, what would they think if I talk like this? But a lot of people woke up to a higher level of consciousness. They did.
Yeah, I think so.
You did. A lot of people did. But they don't go around and talk about it. They kind of have that, well, if I talk like this, what would they think? And everyone's going around with that higher level of awareness, still going around with that subconscious agreement not to talk about it.
Yeah.
So you're not alone in your awakening. You're not. A lot of people woke up back in 99. I talked to a metaphysician, Enid Vien, a good friend of mine. And I remember back in 1999, she goes, well, there's a phenomena going on. And it reminds me of a past life when I was in a druid type of priestess or priest, whatever what she was. And what she brought to my attention was, you know, she says, me and my husband, Dave, we were sitting here at a restaurant commenting on how beautifully cut these tomatoes were. Now, you know, you can cut a tomato two ways, segments or like discs, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Now they're sitting there commenting on how beautiful these discs of tomatoes were cut. Well, why did they cut them in discs? Because normally a tomato will come in a segment, like a wedge, right?
Yeah, I've seen them both ways.
Yeah, but generally if you go to a restaurant, how are they cut?
Like now, if you want to, yeah, probably like a wedge, but if you get a big greasy cheeseburger, it's going to have a circle of tomato on top of it.
True. This was like, all right, so anyway, they're sitting there and they're talking about, wow. So they were talking, they look at each other talking, and they look back down, and the tomatoes had changed.
No way.
Yes way.
No.
And that was back in 1999, and then suddenly her awareness, her recall, she goes, oh, it's happening. She was talking about this parallel universe. Imagine two disks, like two universes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That are coming into contact with each other where the edges are touching. She goes, the last time that happened, last time I had the phenomena of this, was a lifetime, a long time ago when I was a druid. And back then it happened, and that was the sign of a mass awakening. Something's happening. That's 1999. And she goes, Ken, I know it. Like the marrow of my bones, I know it. So make a wish. And whatever you wish for, it'll come true, as long as it's light with intent. Don't put any effort on it. If you put effort on it, it'll slow it down. But if you make a nice, slight, whimsical wish, make a wish now. This is 1999.
Okay.
Guess what the wish was?
What was it?
That I would be talking like this authentically, not business self, not social self, and fitting. That I would come out of my closet with such free ease that the way I speak from authentic self would become popularized. Not the other way around, where, you know, we've got this agreement to be popular by making less of our psychic abilities. It's almost like an unspoken thing. You can't talk like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't admit that you have psychic abilities. It's like you've got to put that bushel basket on your light. It's like a subconscious agreement. So I wish back in 1999 that the way I said, you know, I know. And just like you, Greg, you know back in 1999 you had an awakening.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people did.
Oh,
imagine
really
1999
strange.
That you had that awakening, and then whatever you imagine your Ken Payne, and you're saying, you know, I wish that this awareness I have, this consciousness, and communicating at this level would be more popular than the way we're doing it now. In other words, I wish that the bushel basket comes off the light, and that we all operate as authentic self, spiritual human beings, not being human. So I wish for the planet to do that, but most has to start with me. So I said, you know, and guess what the wish is? To be able to communicate this way in business, starting right here with me. Yeah, I'm doing it, and it's
yeah, you sure
easy.
Are,
and it's very easy. It's really easy. I guess what it was is that, you know, back in 1999, it wasn't easy for me. And maybe the simple wish was is that it would be easy for me. That was 1999. Let's go back, segue from calling. That's a spiritual purpose. What are you doing on this rock out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
What's your calling? What's your purpose? What's your spiritual purpose? I think, Greg, you've got the best spiritual purpose, the best spiritual calling a person could ever have.
In being a recruiter?
Yes.
Why do you think that?
I know it. If you could wake up above the linear flow, let's go religious here. You ready? Flip it around. Let's flip it. All right, so let's pretend on a Catholic basis, all right, you're in purgatory. Pretend you're in purgatory, right?
Okay.
Waiting. Well, you're purging at the same time. I mean, your purge means, you're getting rid of waste. You know, purge, right? Well, if you think about it, think about life as purgatory, where there is time that allows a cause and effect. So you cannot hardly evolve your soul without time. That means if you have a cause, a ripple effect, time creates the ripple effect, swings back around, and then you get your, so you have a cause, like dropping a pebble in the water, it creates time. It goes out, and then the ripples back in, and you get your effect. That's time. Now, you can't evolve your soul without that cause and effect. It would be very difficult to evolve your soul without cause and effect. And with cause and effect, you are allowed to purge, to release things and learn things and let go of things to evolve your soul. So let's flip it out. Flip it back in and say that life with time and space is purgatory.
Life in time and space is purgatory.
You can't hardly purge without time and space. You can't hardly evolve your soul without time and space. So if you look at it from a Catholic model, you're thinking purgatory is when you don't have the body and you're in a vacuum of waiting and waiting without, okay? And you're purging. Okay? Let's could flip it around even. All right, let's go back. Say that you're a guide. Say that right now you're a recruiter, but you're a guide. You
okay.
get to choose who gets out of purgatory and gets into a new life. Think of yourself as a guide.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, you know, I had to use the word angel. That's a role. All these, any words I use, like, you know, an angel or a guide, these are roles, okay? You're not your role. Just say, okay, I'm a being with a role. So let's just say you're not so much in purgatory. You're kind of outside the hamster wheel. You don't have to worry about, punching a clock. I mean, you're pretty free. You can get to do what you want to pretty much. You can call anybody you want to. You don't have to, you know, if that, you know, client or cut or candidate gives you a hard time, you say, I'll see you later, right? How much freedom you have.
Right.
Where 98% of the people that you deal with in purgatory, they're stuck there. And they have to be there until a guide comes along and says, okay, you've learned your lesson. You're better, you know, you're ready. If you're really good, I'm going to let you go to, what is the word heaven? So, as a recruiter, you see the correlator. All these people out here are on these hamster wheels, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, around and around they go. Sometimes, you know, they give their blood, their sweat, their tears. They almost get the promotion, and all of a sudden, bam, they get shock, betrayal, and loss, and they're back, you know, doing the same thing. And they have to, because if they don't, then they're stuck doing that, but not you. You don't have
all right,
to.
All right, so that production floor might be called purgatory for some
that
people.
It would be purgatory.
Purgatory plastics.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's one of those.
Yeah. Somebody listening to the show right now in the stream of consciousness will pick it up one of these days and go, you know, I'm going to call my show. I'm going to call my purgatory plastics. And it's possible. If they don't care what people think. Got it? So
yeah.
Let's look at that. You're like an angel or a guide, right? You're free. You don't have to put up with that son of a bitch. No, but 98% of the people you talk to had to put up with that son of a bitch, don't they? Who's doing what? Suppressing all the people and, you know, smoking a cigar, cracking a whip, and, you know, I don't know if you talk to people, but most people aren't happy at work, you know, as an employee. They're not, you know, they're comfortable, but that's not happy. And a lot
right.
of people will tell you they're comfortable. Really aren't even comfortable. They're kind of in pain about it all. And what are they doing? Wait. Kind of like they're in purgatory. Doing the cause and effect and learning things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cause and effect evolving their soul. All of a sudden, you basically take a look at their resume and you go, look here. Here's one that deserves to get out. And think of it like that.
Yeah,
now, look
well,
at
that's
it.
One way. But it, I can see what you're saying there. I would hope that I wouldn't put someone in just a different purgatory.
A lot of times you do, because a lot of times you put a person into a different place. It's hell, and they go, "Gosh, I really," but they're getting their grace. Sometimes when you make a placement, it's a bad placement. You didn't do it. Don't go into false responsibility. as long as you're being transparent about what they're getting into, the challenges, the good and the bad and the ugly, and it's their choice, it's their perceptions, and they're there, you know, and the client can look inside the horse's mouth and say, oh, yep, mm-hmm, he's what I'm looking for, and the horse can go, yep, that's the field I really want to go to. But 7 months later, turns into a lot worse than what he had. Got it? You, as a guide, have just taken that person from purgatory into a lower level of hell, which may be absolutely necessary for that person to get.
You mean necessary to give it like a shot in the arm of looking inward towards what they really want to do?
Exactly. So if you look at it from a spiritual, you see it spiritual, then what you're doing is like a guide. Probably one of the most important things a person could do is basically be a catalyst and wake them, get them at where they're going faster. Or they'll be stuck on that wheel. And you come along and you go, hey, you know what? You look pretty dang good. Looks like you've done your share of cooking. Let's put you out of here. Oh, next thing you know, I'd say about 80% of the time, you do get the person out of purgatory and get them into a higher level, closer to, say, the word heaven.
Yeah, but I understand that. It helps, though, when that, you know, that person has looked inward on, you know, what that true calling is. Otherwise, it's just back to a purgatory after a certain period of time.
Exactly. But a lot of times, if a person has enough pain, pain will create insight. They're looking in. Wisdom is like this, you know. We start with desire. I mean, let's go back out into infinity. Let's start from the void, okay? You want to do a flip out. Flip it out like this, okay? We just talked about how the physical universe can be seen as a spiritual concept, as a role. You're really playing guide from purgatory to heaven or hell in the role that you play. It's kind of like a guide. All right, so let's flip it even further out. Okay, I like the word flip because it really means a lot. It does, because it's a flip.
Okay.
It is a flip. All right, so let's go out past the Big Bang. Okay, let's go way out past the Big Bang. Go out a zillion years before the Big Bang light gets out to that part of the void, I'll put you out. A zillion years before the light gets out, it's going to be total dark. You got it? And you get to watch light come to you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is that void? That's where you truly emanate from. See, the linear flow of space and time gives you the feeling of you're in the center looking. All right, so here's a good exercise. Imagine you're in the center of a diamond, okay?
All right.
Imagine you're in the center of a diamond that has 6.2 billion facets, 6.2 billion souls. Imagine your soul is like a lens or a facet on a diamond. And you're in the center, and you're looking out towards the stars, and you're out there, and you're looking out towards the void. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you're one of 6.2 billion souls doing that.
Yeah.
Now let's get you way zillions of years out in the void where you truly emanate from. Truly, you emanate out there. And you have the perception and dimension of being on the inside looking out. Let's just show you how small the physical universe really is. Imagine the physical universe is a diamond. Okay? Now put it in the largest auditorium you can possibly imagine. Now be way out there in the grandstands, way out there in the dark, and everyone's looking at a really small, shiny, shiny little diamond.
Yeah.
But in the dark, there's no space. There's no need to communicate. With space, now we can communicate. In other words, Greg, well, the reason why we're talking right now is because we have space. We can't communicate without space. In the void, there is no space. There is no time.
Okay.
No space, no time, no separation. We're all one. saying God. No space, we're all one. No time, nothing to separate us. That's in the dark. That's in the auditorium. And the entire physical universe would be like a really, really small diamond right there sitting on the floor. And you think, and you, what we do is you flip in with a dimension, seeing yourself as self in a body with a viewpoint, viewing outwardly. That's a flip, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why I like the word flip. It is a flip phenomena. So one is linear, one is not. One is the phenomena of separation, of individuality, shines, expresses its uniqueness. One sparkle. Imagine a body of water. Imagine that the sun is one, and the sun shines down, and now you're sitting on the side of a beach, and you see one little flecker of the sun on a wave. And waves create all those diamond, shiny, shiny stuff on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of those flickers is you. But you're different than me. I'm a little flicker too, but I'm a little different. And now God can see itself in many, our individual uniqueness, from the back seat of an auditorium where we're all one. Let's get back down to calling. What are you doing on this little rock, or in this little rock, looking out? What are you doing looking out? You're basically expressing beauty. So in the dark, you can't see God. Too close. So you flip, you make less. It's called a fall. And you fall and you flip into the center of the diamond, and you're looking out through one soul, one facet. And look at me. Another facet, another soul, another shine, another flicker. It's beautiful. Out there in the dark, that's truth. Well, it don't move. See, it doesn't alter the truth that what you are and what I am, we are the truth. People go, what's the truth? Well, it's not facts. Facts is, you know, it's the fact that that diamond had a little glimmer of aqua velvet. Maybe your essence is aqua colored or purple, whatever essence you bring. And there's nothing like it. Greg L., you have an essence that is nothing, I mean, it's so unique. So needed. That's beauty. So how does truth become beauty? It's through the flip phenomena of knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things, knowledge, just knowing that there's something a little better outside the purgatory.
Mm-hmm. So
things that you never even thought of before, mm-hmm. or heard about, or, you know, a different way of thinking.
Be on the inside of a linear flow with shine, shining out. If you put a diamond in the sun, you saw all that beauty coming out, all that shine, all that brilliance. That's beauty. Now, this is some proof. Now, where we emanate from, it's static. It doesn't move. There is no space. There is no time. We always have been, always will be. Got it?
Okay.
It doesn't move. It's the truth. It doesn't alter. There's no space. There's no time. There's no altering. It just is. Now, let's get back in the diamond. Now look around in your room right now and tell me something that's not altering.
Something that's not altering.
Tell me something in your room or in the physical universe, in the world of motion. Tell me something that's not altering.
You mean what's something that's static?
Mm-hmm. Something that's not altering.
Oh. Well, there's the wall plug.
Well, that's got movement in it.
I guess everything's moving then.
Mm-hmm.
To get right down into it.
It is
smaller and smaller pieces.
Yeah, all right. So it's particles. It's energy. It's like atoms spinning around. The only reason why a pure solid is like if you spin a wagon wheel, get a stick, try to put a little pure solid on it. Those atoms are spinning so fast. Those particles are hauling ass so fast, they appear solid, don't they?
Yeah, they appear to the eye solid.
Uh-huh. It's energy. What's creating that? Well, behind every particle, quarks and radical part, you know, these string theory, all that stuff. Right. So waves create particles. Particles create atoms. Atoms spin. Now you got molecules. Now you got cells, and then cellular structure. And next thing you know, you got algae. Next thing you know, you got cement. It's all a bunch of waves. What are those waves? Those waves are emanated from the void of truth. Truth is static. What's creating the solids? Particles. What are creating the energy? What are those waves? What are those waves from this side of the void? So on the outside, we're flowing waves. Life, energy, dynamis. Waves. Those waves turn into particles. Those particles turn into atoms. Those atoms are spinning. You know, quantum mechanics, all that stuff. Somewhere between now. All right, so let's look at that. On this side of the void, it's perfectly still. Get inside the diamond, and it's a lot of movement. You want to know how that happens?
How?
All right, so let's go into truth. It's static. It doesn't alter. Because if it altered, it wouldn't be true. You get that? If it alters, it's not true.
Okay.
Agree? The truth doesn't alter.
It is what it is.
It is what it is, right. It doesn't alter. That's that void. That's us without space and time. All right, so let's look at the lie.
Okay, a lie.
The first lie, the lie. It is a limit. Also the word linear. How do we frame this? We frame it with knowledge. Knowledge is a lie. It has to be the first lie. It's a limitation of infinity. Limiting infinity. Withholding.
Uh-huh.
Withholding it. Withholding infinity. Encapsulating it by limiting it. We are limiting it.
So you're just getting
there.
Uh-huh.
Get it? It's a limit, which is a lie. Now, that's an implosion. Imagine truth being encapsulated and limited or imploding something, contracting it. You're doing that. You're doing it right now. You're limiting self. You're making it linear. It's a lie. What is another word for that? It's knowledge. It frames it. All right, put a frame around it. Now you've got something that looks linear, east, north, and south. That's knowledge. Knowledge is a frame. Creates nothing, because it would be nothing, no thing. That's a thing. If you hear these vibes, hear that stuff, that's a thing. That's a way. That's a thing. We're nothing with potential, the potential of all potentialities, which is infinity, no boundary. It has to implode. It has to have a limitation. Without the limitation, there will be no shine. Think about it, a bomb, it implodes. So if you implode truth, you're doing it. You have to agree. You have to limit. You have to encapsulate. You have to press down. And you press down and limit down and fall down into the frame of knowledge. Now you have time. Now you can look to the left. Now you can look to the right. Just like a number line. expression. So that's truth manifesting, which means make visible. Truth is being manifested into a God experience of expression, uniqueness, linearly. It's a lie. Because it's pressed, so it shines. All right, here's another way. Like words?
Sure.
Yeah, look at the words. Imagine the void is charcoal. You got it?
Okay.
Press it.
Uh-huh.
You got a diamond. It's going to shine. You're pressing yourself. You have desire. You have an urge. And impress yourself. You implode your truth. You implode it as an aspect of the divine. And out comes a lot of sparks from a flaming, burning bush, is another way of looking at it. You press it so you can express it. You limit yourself. So you want to get religious. The first means you're withholding self. You like religion? You like the metaphors of religion? It's like this. All right, so there's this tree in the middle, in the center, right?
Okay.
Okay. And God says, well, you can have everything, but you can't have this. That's a withhold. You got it?
Yeah.
That's a limitation, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that would be.
That's a temptation. There's no such thing as temptation without a withhold, right? There's
yeah,
no such thing as temptation without a limitation.
With a withhold.
Yeah, start with a limitation. Now you've got a withhold. With a withhold, now you can tempt. Now you can lure. Or you can take... All right, you like that one. It's a limitation. You're limiting it. I'm limiting it. Everyone that's listening here is a limitation of infinity. They're pressing infinity into a bubble. It's like... What's inside the bubble is infinity. You have your own universe. Like the infinity process. Here we go. Do some really cool infinity process. You're emanating from the same spot as I'm emanating from the center of infinity.
Yeah.
There's no space and time. You're emanating from the same spot as I'm emanating. Be in the center of the stream of consciousness where anything goes and everything goes. And that, right?
Okay.
Okay. That means within your bubble, you have air. That air would be infinity. These are metaphors. Now, that means that you can think and have thoughts anything you want. There's no limitations in that air. That air is infinity. So if you want to create a concept of give me three words that have never, ever been put together that are not... This is a great game to play because it really is about as high creative as you can come and to change infinity. Have we ever played this before?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
At Vivian's.
Good. So here's how it goes. Go into these various universes of thought, of concept. Right? You can say food, musical instruments, and mechanical something. All right, so go off into the food, you know, so this is infinity. This is the air that's encapsulated in your bubble, center of the stream of consciousness, infinity. Go out to the food universe. I'm going to go out and grab my thought concept. An avocado. Got me an avocado. It's in my
All right,
air.
Avocado, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go off into a music. A flute. Grab me a flute and a sprocket.
A sprocket and an avocado.
And a flute.
And a flute.
You got that?
Yeah, okay.
Then watch me morph that. I'm going to morph it.
Uh-huh.
It's going to exist in the center of stream of consciousness. And when it's morphed and two people agree to it, actually three would be better. Universes are usually comprised of three, like yes, no, and maybe. Black, white, gray. Try. You know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Universe is composed of try. Somebody can call in. Well, let's morph this thing together here. Me and you are going to morph this avocado flute sprocket. Here's what it looks like. You ready? Got a picture of a avocado. It's got that greenish olive kind of light olive looking skin, right?
Yeah.
You know what it looks like? Got that picture?
Yeah, that's a green avocado.
Yeah. Got that. All I want you to do now is got it. Now what I want you to do is I want you to get a it's kind of like a cartoon. Grab your rolling pin and flatten that out. Flatten it out. Okay, now it's going to flatten it out to where it's about the thickness of a bicycle sprocket. You got it?
The avocado is?
Yeah, now it's about the thickness of a bicycle sprocket.
Okay.
Okay. Now everywhere there's a tooth on that sprocket,
yeah.
Get down in the minutia here, get down small, and turn each fruit tip or tooth into a flute. And every time you turn that with your pedals, it's going to play music. Did that ever exist before now?
I hope not.
Good, because now it does. And that is pure infinite create. That's infinity processing. Those are infinity processes. That air that's in that bubble that allows me to do that, that air, that's God. That's the God of air. That's infinity. That's the potential of all potentialities. That's where you emanate from. Now, through agreement, which will create that into a reality, if you get enough people to really, really make that real, it becomes through agreement. Yeah, I agree. I got that picture. I got, you know. All right, so somebody call in here. Call in if you're from the United States. Call in at 888-228-4494, and if you're outside the United States or Canada, call in at 877-489-6350. And we're going to get somebody else to see that picture. And that's an avocado sprocket flute. Now, you see what it looks like, right, Greg?
Well, yeah, you got this avocado, and you flatten it out into the shape of a sprocket. Now, the sprocket has cogs all the way around it, or teeth. And each one of those cogs is a flute. And
really small flute, isn't it?
Yeah. And you kind of slap that thing on a, like on a bicycle that got pedals, and you can turn that thing around at the center of it. And every time you turn those pedals and a cog moves from on its radii, you've got a song being played through that flute.
Yeah.
That flute that's cog.
Okay, that's how it happened.
So you got an avocado sprocket flute.
Exactly. Now, that was done at the same non-space. There's no space there. That's where everything manifests from. It's so, you know, you get this concept of pressing. So when I say infinity, think about the potential of all potentiality. Think about potential of all potentiality. Think of it as air. Now let me press that into my bubble. Let me press it really hard, and I'll manifest, which means make visible. And out it comes. It's expressed. Now you see it, I see it, somebody else is going to see that. It does now exist. That is manifestation. Now, you know, you could, through technology, now, what did that was knowledge. It's a lie. It's an agreement. So when I say knowledge, I mean to frame something. I mean to press it down.
Uh-huh.
To frame a linear concept. Here's another one for you. Ready?
Okay.
Let's go back to this word calling. Okay? So what is your calling? You can press your infinity down into helping others with compassion, knowing that we're all one, and helping people express their golden nuggets, their God-given talents, so that they can multiply those things.
Yeah, and that's for me, you know, that's a it's a long process. It's a process that I just continue to think about, kind of whittle down what things really matter and what doesn't matter, and
what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. Just kind of just, it's a picking and choosing, I guess, or getting rid of what I don't like, don't think I'm good at, and grabbing on to the things that make me happy and that I feel that I am good at. And I think when you get it all down and whittled away, you know, you're left with the calling, or you found the calling. And I don't want to diminish it by saying that you're left with something, but I think maybe you find or you shape that calling.
You press it. So you're
infinity. Oh, you press it, yeah.
Yeah, you're infinity. There's no, in your bubble that has that air, that potential of all potentialities, right? That you're, got it? What we just did, you can do it too, right?
Yeah.
You can turn something, in other words, you can turn nothing into something, right?
Right.
Right, you can do that. But you're going to have to press down and encapsulate and then express that. The only reason why you won't is because you're limiting your expression of your uniqueness. You can create things for people and bridges for people to express themselves where it matters most in their livelihood, in their life. Now think about it. How many people are out there working? I mean, they spend, 10, 14 hours a day working. So most of their time is spent at work, right?
Right,
they spend a couple,
work.
Yeah. Okay, so a guy, he's in purgatory. You come along, you're a guide, right? You've got a calling to help this guy express his uniqueness, his God-given talents, his livelihood, all that investment into expanding him towards higher purposes. You're basically multiplying his talents. You're helping him multiply his talents through synergy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's pretty high calling, Greg.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Think of him as being in purgatory. You come along, you're a guide, you go, okay, let me see your resume. Wow, okay. Let me see if I can get you into a better place. And he gets to a better place, and his gold is going to be put into a furnace. You know, he's going to be challenged. He's going to get, you know, more pressure put on him. And that gold is going to turn into a diamond, or, you know, think of it like that. And then the next thing you know, it multiplies. And the ripple effect. And now he's putting bread on people's tables that he doesn't even know. And that's a pretty powerful thing you got going there. Can you think of a higher calling than increasing a person's livelihood? What it means the most to them. The most important thing to a person in their life is generally their work. And you're a catalyst. You speed them up. You get them where it's going faster. You get them out of purgatory. You give them hope. You give them the opportunity to share more love, more God-given talents. And guess what? Now the kids got, you know, better school systems. You know, they got hope. Think about that as a calling. It's a spiritual purpose. You ever looked at it like that?
I have on occasion, and I guess I really haven't kind of run with it.
Yeah, run with it.
It seems to come up a lot when I talk to you.
Well, I'm a catalyst. I'm going to wake people up to their spiritual potential. It's an awakening. It's like, okay, this is what you are. You're a human being. You're part of God. You are, in essence, emanating from the same non-space as I am, and we're basically multiplying. We're expanding people's. We're doing this stuff. This is some cool stuff. If you look at it like that, so you have a calling, not just a career, man. Because you're not stuck. You're not stuck. You're not. You know that's a son of a bitch. You get the hell away from go get another client. They can't do that. So you're free. You're taking risk. You can get out there and you can really shake it up. It's like, you know, one time I told Gerald. I said, you know, looking at a resume is like, you know, taking a Band-Aid off of somebody's soul, and looking at their soul track and going, well, you can do this and this and this. Okay, well, since you can do all this stuff, and this is who you are, this is a recording of your soul, hey, person that sends you a resume, that's their life. That's a track of their life. The soul records everything, so So it's like going, you get something better. You've had people go, thank you, whenever you place them, whether they express it or not. Without you, without you, the connector, they would still probably be there.
That's
you looking
true.
At it like that?
Yeah.
That's happy. That's happiness. If you see it from the spiritual aspect. If you see it down in the business aspect, if you see it down in the social aspect, you probably won't see it. Person out there is kind of on the hamster wheel until you come along. And you go, oh, look what you can do. And you can breathe life into them by what you express. And who you connect them to. Your lines of communication are doing that. That's what you express. It's a nice heartfelt intention to connect at that level. Very inspirational. I love that word.
Inspirational. Spirit.
It's a beautiful. Yeah, in spirit. You're in spirit with them. You're as one, like two circles coming to one, coming closely, and now they are one. For just a split second, when they're inspired, they're one in spirit with you. You have a position of freedom. You're free. Man, you are pure create. You come in to work, and you work that desk, and you create that. You start with nothing, and you end up with something. And you have, see, it's pure create. It's pure freedom. It's pure risk.
I know. If you saw my desk, that'd be true. There's nothing here. There's a telephone.
Right. And you start with nothing, and you express a bridge. A potential for another person to wake up to their potential. That's cool stuff you're doing there. Be it. Do it. And have it. And you'll see it. It's spiritual. It's purely spiritual. How can you separate spirit from anything? I don't know. People must be going around thinking, well, if I talk like this, next thing you know, you got a bushel basket on your life, and you're on a hamster wheel, and you're going in there in the effort, and you forget. If you ever want to know what makes a person forget, that's not being acknowledged for what they are truly doing. Here's a cool one. Ready? Let's get linear, because people like linear concepts. You know, truth is so simple. You know, it's not complicated. It doesn't have edges on it. It doesn't have knowledge. When you start talking truth, it doesn't have, it's so close to this circle concept, it doesn't have sharp edges. They can't grasp it. It's not complicated enough. It's right over their head. So let's get something that's really true, and let's lie about it until it has edges on it and make it linear. Then they'll grasp it because they can hold on to those sharp edges. You got it? Did you catch what I just said?
Yeah, because right now I'm looking, I got a mirror on the wall, you know, a rectangular mirror.
Good.
It's got a wood border around it, a wood frame.
All right. Watch this. This is.
And it's on a, and it's on my, and it's on a wall. And it's, you know, the wall's eight feet high and 20 feet wide. And let's say that wall is the truth, or at least, well, in itself, it's a bordered area as well. But anyway, picture the wall as the truth, and this mirror on the wall is just a bordered piece of that truth. So the mirror is a lie. The mirror, the framed mirror. But I can grab a hold of the corners of it.
Yeah.
And I, just like on a desktop computer, you can slide it over. I can put another nail in the wall and slide it over there. That would be a different lie. And move it down in the corner, there'd be a different lie down there, too. It'd be a bordered piece of the truth.
Yeah, linear. Lie. Anything that's linear is a lie. Because we are spherical. There's no beginning or end, so anytime you put, you know. Yeah, you border that. Good. I'm glad you bring this bear, because it's a great process. This process I came up with about 6 months ago. I was studying words and, you know, where words come from, or symbols like alpha and the monomyth of the alphabet and the alphanumerics and all that stuff. And you get really into the sand of knowledge. You got to get into the alphabet. So I started studying words. And I started studying the symbols like A, B, C, D, E, and all that, because those are the building blocks of word. Now let's go out into the void. Tell me when you're... Now, let's go back and... All right, so check this out. You ready? So you know,
yeah.
I'm all about the study of manifestation, and it means to make visible. It's magic,
okay.
Is what it is. Your word are seeds, and they are pure magic. From the dark, from the void, where we emanate as one. No space, no time. That's dark. That's the female side. Yin-yang concept. Yin is dark. Got it?
Okay.
You ever heard of yin-yang? So think of the Bible when it says, in the beginning there is word. Got it?
Okay.
Word made flesh means manifest. Got it?
Yeah.
Cool. These are the mysteries behind mysteries. Behind mysteries, behind mysteries. And really get into this. And let's look at this mirror effect. Whatever you outflow, yin, flow, it's karma, whatever you're going to talk about. And will. Word and will. Ready?
Okay.
Word is first. Word is magic. Your word is like seeds. In other words, all this is here because of magic. The potential of all potential. You've got to be able to say, let there be light, and it's your will that, you know, you will it, the will of God. And it is. It becomes. It's, you know, it manifests. How does it do that? Through word. Because you've got to have the words before you can even say, let there be light. So, word is concept, or the word conceive, or encapsulating infinity. Now, think about a female aspect. When I don't get into this body thing, okay, where you're a man or a woman, I'm saying you are both yin and yang. If you see yourself as a human being, go above human, and you're a being, you're neither male or female, but you do have both energies. You have expand, contract. Contract. You know cold contracts, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's female aspect of self. That's that press. That's contract. Female orgasm feels like a contraction. A male orgasm feels like an expansion. It's an implosion before you can explode. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
You must implode. You must press down and kaboom. There's the white light. So concept. Conceive light. So what is concept? It is word. So it contracts infinity and presses it to a seed kind of feeling. All right, let's go to the mirror. This is going to trip you out.
Okay.
I came across this process. We've only got about 5 or 10 more minutes left, and we're going to do some really cool transcendent stuff here with manifestation. All right, so I want you to go to the auditorium. Get out of the physical universe. Okay, get out of the diamond. Close your eyes to do this, because this is cool. Mm-hmm. Close your eyes. Now put your hand over your eyes, and you'll see a bunch of white zillions of, like a white, like, you know, if you ever look at a TV screen when there's no reception, they call that white noise. If you look, got your hand over your eyes?
Yeah.
Do you see all the zillions of white spots?
Well, I see a whole bunch of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark and then a little...
It's dark.
Like seeing stars.
Exactly. Everyone sees that. Now, you're on the outs. In other words, you're outside the physical unit. This is a process. Remember I told you, like, you know, the diamond is in the middle of a dark auditorium?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Now, that's... side of a mirror where it's dark. Mm-hmm. Imagine that white stuff is on the other side of the mirror where it's light. So the dark is on the dark side of the mirror. And what you're looking at is the light being made manifest. Now, this is really so simple it may elude you. Keep your eyes closed.
All right.
Pretend that you're on the dark side of the mirror, and you're looking through the other side, and all you're seeing is the zillions of those white snow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what it's like to be kind of like dead, if you want to call it, or you know, without a body, or where you come from, in the void. Now, I want to see something really trippy. Open your eyes. Look at a wall. Open your eyes. Look at a wall.
Yeah.
And you'll see the other side of the mirror, because you'll see a bunch of black dots. Now you're on the side of the mirror of light, which is will. So word is dark. And with will, W-I-L-L, becomes light. In other words, what you're seeing out here in the world of motion of light is word manifest. So the word turns into light.
Okay. Now, I like that world of motion, the world of motion you always talk about.
Mm-hmm. So you have your light, you have your eyes open, you can see the dark little bitty spots, can't you?
Yeah.
That's the other side of the mirror. You want to know the power of now. You want to know the presence of now, where everything is happening now, and there's no such thing as time, no such thing as space. Be in the now. Open your eyes, and that's time. It's linear. Now you're getting the concept of time.
Close. Yeah, that now thing, that's a hard one to... That's a hard one to grasp, to put yourself in the now, only the now. That's difficult.
That's right in the center of the mirror. It's right between word and will. Now, to turn off the mind is turning off the word, turning off the internal dialogue. Okay? Then you can master this light of manifestation. Staying in the now means you're not in the light and you're not in the word. The kick is turning off the word. Turning off the internal dialogue, turning off the mind of word. Turn that magic off, turn off that concept, and now you're in now. And this is the state right between the center of the mirror, between the light and the word, or between the will and the word. Will is light. Your willpower creates this light. But you must have word, and that's your psychic ability, that's your magic. Turn that off, and you're in now. Be right between center of a mirror. That is truth. Static. It always has been, always will be. You'll always be in the now, no matter where your mind of knowledge takes you. It's your mind of knowledge is taking you these places.
No kidding.
Yeah, that knowledge is doing that.
Yeah, it goes back to the past, and then you look forward, well, what are we going to be doing then? And
Turns your circle into looking left and looking right. And you can look all you want to, but you'll still be in the center of the circle of now. You'll always be in now, whether you have that body or not. You'll drop that body, and you're still going to be in a now. It's just that it's going to be a little bit boring for you because you're not going to be able to manifest your word in light, in a hologram that mirrors back to you a cause-effect, and it's going to be very more difficult for you to evolve and play. You won't have the venue. So life is. Now, what's the optimum? The ultimate is to be enlightened in flesh. I mean, that's heaven on earth. The state of transcendent thought of the now, while you're in a body, is the kingdom of heaven on earth. That is the ultimate. There's nothing better than being enlightened in flesh. Nothing better than that. And knowing your calling while you're in that state, that's the stuff. take you eons to get to this level. But it can also go like that if you're in the now. And staying here and maintaining that state, your psychic abilities go through the roof because you're in spirit. And you inspire. That's your intention, to inspire. And this is how truth manifests into beauty. With the smallest little lie. You dig it?
Yeah.
Fast, wasn't it?
It was fast.
Uh-huh.
Is the show over already?
Yeah, well, you know, it's got about 5 minutes or so, but just kind of
go
over
that. Oh, good. Good, good.
Yeah. Look at a number line.